This is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee.
And now the men are completing the revving up of their motors, and we're going to carry you around the track with them on the pace lap. Then they will come past the starting line here, and the official starter, Seth Klein, and the honorary starter of the day, Tommy Milton, will put down that flag, and the big race will be underway.
Bill Vukovich is on his 56th lap. We have not received the standings at the end of 50 laps, but we have them unofficially, and they're going to be jumbled up very shortly. The caution light is out. The caution light is out, and we'll probably be getting a report very shortly, so I'll hold it here just temporarily before getting into the standings. The caution light is out, indicating trouble.
And there's the checkered flag for Parnelli Jones, the winner of the 1963 500-mile race. Parnelli Jones from Torrance, California, wins the 500.
And the checkered flag is given to Rick Mears of Bakersfield, California. His hand in the air acknowledging victory. Rick Mears, the winner of the 63rd 500-mile race.
With two laps to go, Kevin Kogan picks up the pace, and they are flying at Indianapolis. The first three are right together. Bobby Rahal charges down the inside, and Rahal comes past Kevin Kogan.
The checkered flag waves, and Al Unser Jr. has won the 78th running of the Indianapolis 500. Al Unser Jr. becomes a two-time winner of the Speed Classic on Memorial Day weekend in Indianapolis, Indiana.
We're going back to green flag racing. 190 of 200 laps will be complete this time by Danica Patrick going side by side with Weldon. She'll be the leader in turn number one.
Oh my goodness, they're three wide, but Pat making up the lead. Mira has jumped up to third. Danica Patrick up front of the 500.
Welcome to Trackside, 1070 The Fan, WFNI Indianapolis. From our downtown Indianapolis MS Communications headquarters, I'm Kevin Lee, along with Kurt Cavan from the Indianapolis Star. Matt Hicks is our studio producer. He put together the opening montage, courtesy of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. In reverse order, we heard from the Hall of Famer, Jerry Baker, with Danica Patrick taking the lead in 2005. Little Al winning his second in 94. Rahal in 86, Mears win in 79, Parnelli in 63, and then also highlights from 55 and the parade lap in 47. Love hearing those highlights, getting us amped up for the 100th anniversary of the Indianapolis 500. Cars will be on track in 2 days with rookie orientation, and then everybody coming up on Saturday. In the program tonight, we will react to the unveiling of a version. And it's a little bit confusing. You have to preface this that it's not necessarily the 2012 IndyCar, but it could be, and it's the closest we've seen so far. So we'll talk about that after we saw that for the first time on IndyCar Open Wheel Weekly. Even I struggle with the name of the show. It's a bit long and lengthy, and it's changed a couple of times through the opening processes of this show. And if you missed it, there are certainly pictures available at IndyStar.com. and IndyCar.com and a lot of other places on Twitter. The show on Versus will re-air at approximately 2 a.m. tomorrow morning. It's scheduled for 2 a.m., but you want to set your DVR for probably a couple of hours, because I know there's hockey on again tonight, and I know that happened last week, that the NHL playoff game went to overtime, or maybe multiple overtimes, and the show started later. So if you did not catch the show, tape it, say, from 2 to 4 a.m., and hopefully that covers you to get a look. Not only just seeing it, but what was really good if you missed the show. And this is the advantage that we have of an hour weekly show that you wouldn't otherwise get in our qualifying coverage or race coverage. Tony Kottman just basically talked through it for about 6.5 minutes, which was really interesting, and then we did some other things as well. Also, Ed Carpenter will be on this program a little bit later to get his reaction to the new car and some other things.
Just promise me at some point in this hour, we'll talk about the fine levied against Kevin Harvick and Kyle Busch. Just please promise me we'll get to that.
Well, are we surprised?
I told you.
That's what we said would happen last night. Do you think anything's going to happen of substance? No.
A little calculation. If you were making, they were fined $25,000 each. Now, at a, even conservatively, these guys are making at least $6 million a year. They're probably making more like 8 to 15, but I'll give you 6. At $6 million a year, that is the equivalent. Well, let's assume
You've done the math?
I've done the math. Let's assume you make $50,000 a year.
I was going to say it's going to be about a traffic ticket.
It is about a traffic ticket because if you make $50,000 a year, that fine is $200.
Okay. And a traffic ticket is actually going to cost you more. It's whatever, $160-some dollars, but with your insurance and the stress level involved, boy, that's pretty meaty. And but they're on probation for four races, Kurt.
Four races.
4 weekends, but it covers all three series. What about ARCA? Does it cover if they go down and run ARCA?
No, it doesn't cover ARCA. Oh. Or the IZOD IndyCar Series. You can, if they can throw a punch, though, on an IZOD IndyCar Series event, that would be something. But... I mean, you asked me last night if they were going to be missing a race. I mean, no disrespect to what you're saying.
The reason I brought it up that way, because unless you're going to tell me they're going to miss a race, then there is no penalty. And I'm not necessarily, no, I am saying they should miss a race. But you'd have to look at precedent and what other people are doing. So that would be the problem with suspending them for a race when you haven't done it for other somewhat egregious acts as well. So I'm not saying I expected it to be a race penalty, but unless you're going to tell me they are parked for a race, then don't even bother making the announcement.
Andrew Bynum of the Lakers gave a elbow shot in that last game. He's going to sit five games
to start the next NBA season with a forearm into the chest, which I also felt was a very egregious act.
Which affected no other players on the floor. It affected no fans. It affected no coaching staff. In this case, that car, pushed as it was, hit by Harvick, could have hit a crew member pretty easily.
Yeah.
And we're not talking knocking him to the floor in this case.
I'd be interested what the crew guys think, the people that are on pit road, whether they're all that concerned about it. Is it just us whining about this?
Here's what the penalty should be. They take Harvick to the garage, shut the door, and let the crew members decide what the penalty is going to be. Maybe a blow to his head. That's what the penalty should be.
Okay, so there's that.
Thank you.
Yep. Well, we had to get that out of the way, and there's no format on this show, so whatever comes top of mind, we jump into it, and now we move back to the business of the IZOD IndyCar Series.
We have led the last two trackside shows with NASCAR, just for the record.
Yep. We move on, though. My first look today at the new Dallara, the 2012, as we mentioned... It has an aero kit on there. The idea behind this is an example of what Dallara could provide, what another manufacturer could provide. This might be the exact kit that Dallara does. My guess is no. My guess is they're going to make some tweaks in this. Plus, they want to keep their package a little bit behind closed doors as well and unveil that when they have to unveil it. But this gives us an idea of what you can do with this main car. What did you think of what you saw today?
Well, I like that the cars are different depending on road course or ovals. I thought it brings a phrase that you used just a little bit ago when we were looking at the photos on IndyStar.com. You used the word Formula One looking.
Yep, the road course.
Comparing to the road course. And I think that is it's interesting that that's the first kind of image that you bring that comes to your mind.
And I say that because of the rear wing being more narrow. It looked more Formula One like the current Formula One cars and the front wing. Now, it's not, the nose is not raised as high and the wing is not as far away from the nose as Formula One, but it's certainly different than the current IndyCar.
So I think that's an interesting mix that the two cars can look that much different. I'm still trying to get my hands around what the back end, we've talked about this a little bit off air, what the back end of the oval car looks like. You know, we talked about, remember we had quite a discussion on a previous show about interlocking wheels and how everybody said, oh, it won't be an Indy car if you can't interlock wheels. And I think...
You sure can interlock those front wheels still.
Sure you can. And I guess my point in this is there was a lot of concern some months ago, and I think this alleviates that because I don't see a problem with it. To me, I look at that and I still come up with IndyCar.
And I'll tell you this, and I'm looking at a picture on IndyStar.com right now, and if you just focus on that back wheel of the oval car, it kind of looks like the back of a Corvette. It looks like the back of a sports car there. My impression of seeing the thing live today and in person is that I really thought the wheels might be covered a little bit more.
Yes, that's...
So I think when you see it live, it is not, and maybe it's because, you know, you're looking above it. You're 6 feet tall and you're looking down on the wheel. It's an open wheel car.
That's my point.
Yeah, it still definitely looks like an open wheel car. So reserve your final judgment until you see it. And if you go out this weekend, you will be able to see it. It's going to be displayed. Those two cars, they're actually show cars. And the road course car, they actually just finished this morning. They finished putting that together. Something else I learned today, we talked about this last night, where are these cars being built? The prototype, the one car, the first car, is being built in Italy. And then they have a warehouse across the street on Main Street, an old building that they're using until the new one is built. And then that's where the first 20, I think it is, are going to be put together. So they're actually going to finish building this first round of cars here in Indianapolis. So they can still technically say these cars were built in Indianapolis. Obviously, they were designed. They were engineered. The bulk of the work was done in Italy, but they will finish them here in Indianapolis until the new building is complete.
So I think it's a pretty successful start. Of course, the elephant in the room is, what are these body kits going to either A, look like, and B, how diverse will they be in year one of the car? And all those things are still to be determined, and they're not going to get an answer to it anytime soon, I can tell you that.
And as Tony Kottman has said, that will have something to do with what the body kit for this Dallara is going to look like. If it's the only one, then he's going to worry a little bit more about the aesthetics of it and what it looks like. So that might have an impact there. The oval, you know, I've seen a lot of the Twitter comments, and a lot of what I'm seeing from people is that they like the road course car better. My impression of it was I thought the oval car was cooler. I thought the oval car had a lot of the look of the Swift car that I so much liked when we were going through this process a year ago. And maybe the people that like the road course car are Formula One fans, and that's the part of that they like. But, you know, I'm kind of thinking Batmobile, but not totally Batmobile, is what I first saw when they rolled the Speedway car off of the trailer today. So
I liked it. For what it's worth, I liked it. I knew you were going to use the word Swift. I could just tell by...
And Matt said the same thing to me today when I walked in. That's when I said this afternoon when they rolled it off. I was actually on the phone with Ed Carpenter. He called me back about being on the show as they were rolling it off, and he said, what's it look like? And I said, yeah, it kind of looks like the Swift does a little bit. So I like it. Now, as we said, that may not be exactly what it looks like, but it's a start, and it's probably not going to look that much different from Dallara's perspective.
No, probably not. They, you know, with Dallara's aero kit on it, it's probably not going to deviate much. You know, and I've thought about how these cars would look if you did, in fact, have four or five manufacturers. And the first year, you might have these cars looking quite a bit different from each other. But the first time one of them was more successful and it had a certain wing a certain way and a certain piece this way and that way, these are going to morph into similar-looking cars pretty quickly because of the success that one has over the other.
On the TV show today, we dealt a lot with the aero kits discussion. We had Roger Penske on tape and also Keith Wiggins talking about a lot of the things that we talked about. We still don't have, and I think most of us still feel like, yeah, you're looking out for the cost, and that's a big concern. But from Roger Penske's perspective, what's his motivation? That's still the lingering question. Is he just looking out for the little guy that doesn't have it? It's not $70,000. As we've said, it's more than that. It's upwards to $500,000 with all of the spares and everything. Is he just looking out for the little guy and the health of the series, or does he fear that the Honda body kit is going to be farther along and better right now than the Chevy aero kit?
See, the problem with listening to Roger and Keith Wiggins and really every one of the car owners is they have had a history of not necessarily these two men, but in general, car owners have had a history of doing what was best for them and not necessarily what was best for everybody else. And so when you've had a situation like that, it's difficult to take them at their word right now. It's the old crying wolf. And if you've heard this a few times, you're not as likely to believe them. And they have they make a lot of good points, and I'm tending to see more of their points by the day. The more I think about this, I'm concerned about this first race being the Indy 500 and being, you know, Honda being so far out ahead of them. I'm also concerned mm-hmm. that there's not going to be very many deviations from Honda in the first place. You may have most of the field being Hondas. So I'm starting to see things.
Hondas?
Yeah, I think there'd be a lot of Hondas.
You think that Chevy would have a Chevy and a Lotus car would have a Honda aero kit?
No. I think the Chevys would be Chevys. I'm saying there won't be many Chevys. I can count four cars
that are going to be Chevy powered.
Correct. And Chevy aero kit if they went aero kits.
The Penske's and who else?
Panther,
yeah.
I don't see anybody else picking a Chevy.
Lotus, we think KV. Do we even know that, though?
I don't think you can say that.
How strange would that be if the Lotus, well, they probably would not be the Lotus-sponsored team next year if they're not running the Lotus car.
I'm not saying it's out of the question. I'm saying...
It's not a lock.
It's not a lock, and my hunch as I sit here right now is that four Chevys, I'm sure somebody might take a Lotus. Would you? I wouldn't.
No.
I would...
If there are some dollars behind it, if you're a factory team, and we talked about that before, is it better to be the sixth Honda team or the number one Lotus team? Might you consider that?
Okay, use your noggin a little bit. Everything we've just talked about, who's going to be further ahead? And
Honda
who's
is. There Honda you go. Is, obviously.
And
now, the other part is what I said, though. If are these manufacturers going to be able to help fund these teams? Because what is going to be the motivation to be Lotus? They got in, no disrespect to them, but they got in last. We're still not 100% certain of who's going to design this. I've heard, Judd?
Right, Judd.
But common sense would say that Honda and Chevy are going to be farther along. So what's your motivation to be the Lotus team if they're not paying you in some form or fashion?
They're going to either have to show you on their numbers sheet, you know, how much more efficient that race car is or that body kit is, or they're going to have to pay you a lot of money, or you're just going to have blind faith, because one of those three is going to be the only reason you'd make those moves.
I guess another reason would be, is there going to be a limit of the number of teams that Honda will partner with? Are they going to say, we're going to pick out 16 cars, and that's the most that we're going to do. So then that is going to leave some of the teams that are less attractive to the engine manufacturer with a choice between Lotus and Chevy.
The point is that the team owners just don't want to have to figure all this out at the Indy 500 next year. They don't want the Indy 500, the 2012 Indianapolis 500, riding on basically a coin flip on which one's going to be better.
Do we suspect, though, that the manufacturers are going to have a limit to how many? If all 26 full-time teams, well, let's say all 20, say 22 of them, because we know Penske is going to be with Chevy and
Panther will be with Chevy.
We suspect. So if everybody else says we want Honda, would Honda supply every other team? My guess would be no.
My guess would be yes.
You think they would?
Mm-hmm. They're in the business to sell cars, sell programs, offset their cost. They're in the business of making money. Yeah, they want to win, and they will win. With the more ammunition you have, the better chance you have to win races.
Would they be encouraged at all to leave some for others?
I don't think that's the way the game's played.
It shouldn't be.
I don't know. I mean, we've not seen the regulations on that, and that's one of the questions that the owners have, is there's an assortment of things that they need to know about these decisions that they don't have answers to. And that's just probably one of them. I mean, we now have the rules regarding the Las Vegas race. You know, they kind of announced that, and just now do we know that you can run one race before Las Vegas, and what the parameters are.
Well, you can if you're the right person.
No, they have said they have now distributed rules or regulations, and you can run one race. Scott Speed's choosing Indianapolis.
But who else could that possibly apply to?
Somebody could. I mean, they could come run Kentucky.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is people are sitting here waiting on Jeff Gordon and Kyle Busch and Dale Earnhardt Jr.
We know that's not happening.
It's not happening.
Yeah.
My guess is Scott Speed's going to be one of the bigger names. If you're following motorsports across the globe,
yeah, probably.
His name's going to be one of the biggest.
By the way, he was on the TV show today and spent a lot of time before the show and after the show with us. Seems like a good guy. Seems like a pretty easygoing guy and seems genuinely excited about this possibility.
I
guess you don't know.
I don't really care.
You spend 20 minutes with somebody, you don't really know them, and ultimately fans care. Fans care whether they're a decent guy or not.
Well, we can figure that out later as we go, but what I heard from Scott Speed in the 2 days since this was announced, or basically we've had a handle of who he is and what he wants to do with this, he sounds excited. Mm-hmm. And that's all that fans or media should care about at this point, that he wants to be here. I've seen a lot of drivers in these 24 years of covering that are there for not necessarily the right reasons. Not a lot, some. And you wanted him to come here. If he's going to come here, you want him to be interested. You know, he said on the show last night that, you know, maybe this could lead to something full-time in 2012. I about fell out of my chair.
Well, he doesn't have a job.
Well, I understand
talking with him off the air a little bit today. He's leaving his options open, as he should. He wants to see where the thing with Kevin Harvick's team goes. He's not interested in just running at the back. His goal is to find somewhere where he can be competitive. And obviously, if you're affiliated with Kevin Harvick, that it gives you an opportunity to be competitive. He is keeping his options open as to this possibly being a destination.
But that's third base compared to where I thought he was last week. You know, I wouldn't have even said he would have swung at the first pitch.
Yeah.
And he's standing on third base wanting to score the run. He wants to be in this. Now he didn't say if it was his first choice, and I'm okay with that. But the fact that it's a choice.
I think he made it pretty clear that Formula One was his first choice.
Yeah, I think he did.
He said this is a step down, but it is technologically, financially, worldwide visibility-wise. I don't know that you want to call the Indianapolis, and I don't know that he meant the Indianapolis 500.
No, he meant IndyCar.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, he said American Open Wheel Racing.
Yeah. What was really interesting today was after the show, Dario Franchitti was watching the show in his motorhome at IMS and saw us talking about the new car and wandered over and was looking at the new car, and we got a shot of him there right at the very end of the show, and then he came up to our studio and was watching Dario talk with Scott Speed and watching someone who's about to take his first laps at Indianapolis get a tutorial from a two-time winner. And I think this is probably okay to share. As Dario said, don't let them give you a loose race car. And Scott said, what do you mean, the first couple of days or so? And he said, no, at all, this month. If it's ever loose, you pull in. You just need to get the feel of it this year, and then you can take another step forward next year.
And I am sure that that's not what Scott Speed wanted to hear.
I don't think so either. I think he's thinking, all right, I do this for a few days, and then I don't know if he has visions of winning the race, but he's maybe thinking if the right things all fall into place, maybe I could win. But I've seen him quoted as saying, I think it was on his Twitter account in the last couple of days, what's your goal? Top 10. Now, you can still finish top 10 in this race with a conservative approach. If you just finish the race, you're going to be probably top 15. It's not as much of a lock as it used to be. It used to be if you finished, you'd be top 10. Now, I think we've had some years where we've had more than 20 cars finish the race. But if you have relatively decent pace
and enough cautions,
you could finish in the top 10 without taking many risks as far as the handling of the car. You're not going to be fast enough to win, but you could get a good result. I thought that was really good advice. And it probably meant a lot more coming from Dario Franchitti than coming from anybody else. So, a lot of good storylines as we get set for Indianapolis. We talked about some of them last night. We'll continue as we go along. I want to hear from a driver what they think about the 2012 version, one of the versions of the next generation IndyCar. Ed Carpenter is set to join us coming up in just a moment. We'll get to some email questions and Twitter questions. Kevin Lee 23 at Kurt Cavan on Twitter. Kevin at 1070thefan.com is the email address. Donald Davidson also coming up after 8 tonight here on 1070 The Fan. This is Trackside 1070 The Fan with Kurt Cavan. I'm Kevin Lee. We got a look at the next generation IndyCar, or what it could look like with the two show cars out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on the Versus IndyCar Open Wheel Weekly Show, which will re-air at approximately 2 a.m. tomorrow morning. It airs every Tuesday at 4. One of those that will be driving the car next year is the driver, the number $67 general entry for Sarah Fisher Racing, getting set for this month's Indianapolis 500, Ed Carpenter. Ed, how's it going?
Good. I sure hope I get to drive one next year.
We're working towards. We'll write it in ink that you get to go ahead and drive one next year. First things first this year. But first, your impressions. I know you weren't out at the track today. I talked to you on the phone a little bit while I was looking at it for the first time. Did you see pictures? Any kind of impressions of the two versions?
I finally saw pictures. You know, I wish I could have been there to see it in person, you know, because you can see a lot more. But, you know, wasn't, you know, probably a little different than what I expected. I wasn't sure what I was expecting anyway, but I thought it was cool. You know, I probably like the look of the road course car a little bit better. The oval car looks kind of a little long and makes the front tires look really small. But, you know, more importantly, I'll be worried about how they drive than what they look like from my standpoint.
What did you like about how the road course car looked like?
Compared to the oval car, I thought the side pods looked better. You know, I didn't really, the giant wheel flip looking things on the oval car just kind of doesn't, I don't think the car looks balanced front to rear. It looks like there's a whole lot of stuff going on in the back, and the front's pretty small and plain. I think the road course car just looks a little more balanced, you know, with the rear wing and front wing. I don't know. I guess that's probably the biggest thing I can say about it.
It looks, you know, a little more balanced than the Delta Wing.
I wasn't comparing it to the Delta Wing. I was comparing the two cars I saw pictures of today.
I did see someone on Twitter saying that the oval car looked a little bit like the Delta Wing, with just the wheels pulled out a lot. And Ed, the responses I've seen on Twitter, I haven't gone on track forum yet to see what people are saying there, but a lot of them are similar to yours. And what I said at the top of the show, in person, I like the Speedway car better than I did the road course car, although I did not dislike the road course car, but I think the rear end more, the Batmobile look, the Swift kind of look, and I think that it looks a little bit different in person than it does in pictures, but regardless, it's all in the eye of the beholder, so people are going to have different opinions on what they think aesthetically looks good. As you said, the main thing that matters is how is it going to race. Do you like the concept of at least the rear wheel being a little bit more closed in so that it's not quite so catastrophic if wheels do touch?
I think so. I mean, I still think, you know, it's still going to be a matter of drivers making good decisions. You know, like, it's been talked about a lot this year. I mean, wings are still going to break. If you run into somebody in the front tire, it could run over something. But I definitely think it's a step in the right direction. You know, the series, you know, forever, you know, has done a great job at continually improving safety, you know, even with the car that we're running now, you know, even though it looks pretty much the same, there's things happening all the time to make it safer. So to see the next step in that, I definitely think it's a good thing. So, you know, just something we're all, I think I'm probably less concerned about it. You know, I was at the shop when pictures first came out today and the rear tire changes are like, man, that's going to be a lot harder changing rear tires. So I think, you know, depending on how you use the car, everyone probably has a little bit different take on all of it.
You know, one thing I'm told is that the rear part of the car, if you see these kind of bumpers, for lack of a better term, that might help avoid something like what happened to Mike Conway, where you run up on a slower car. It would keep the one wheel from running over the other. But all of that, as I understand it, can be taken off and changed. So if someone gets rear-ended in it and it bangs up those pieces on the end, and even the rear wing may be able to be taken off and changed more like a front nose cone. It might be all one assembly and can be, now they can change a rear wing in a race, but that's going to take a little while. This might be something that gets back into the 25-30 second range. So again, if you have some damage in the car, you might still have an opportunity to stay somewhat in the race.
Yeah, and that's always good. You know, I'm excited. I'll be out at the track Thursday, so I'm not sure. I'm guessing they're going to be back behind the pagoda, I'm assuming.
It's in the green room. You might be able to sneak your way in there. It's covered up right now, but maybe you can get somebody to take the tarp off.
I'll probably try to sneak in and take a look at it in person instead of looking at it pictures. Then I might be able to give you guys a little more insight.
Are you ready for the month? I mean, it's been a while.
I am. It's been a while. I think the past 2 weeks, I feel like, have been about 2 months long. It's time's moving extreme. You know, the days are getting longer in reality with the amount of time that's daylight, but at the same time, the days are just really long waiting to get going again, too.
Do you have, I don't want to use the word anxiety, but does the size of the field and knowing how many cars are going to be bunched and realistically, how many cars are going to go home, does that start to get a little bit anxious, or you have too much experience now in this event to experience that?
It's kind of different day to day. You know, first of all, I'm really confident with the work the team's done over the off season. You know, I feel like we're prepared. We have two really nice race cars that I think will both be fast. You know, when I have anxiety, I think it's more where we're going to stack up. You know, the thought hasn't crossed my mind not making the race. So, you know, I don't want to be overconfident, but I think I don't think that we'll be in the same situation that the team was in last year. I'm confident they'll have speed. You know, I more want to, you know, try to be in the same position I was in last year and get into the shootout and try to have some fun there.
There's going to have to be, there certainly will be some people, though, have to be people who are anxious about it because it's going to be so close.
Wild cards. You know, I feel like there's some good cars that maybe don't have, you know, the best driver for Indianapolis in their cars this year. And, you know, then you got a guy like Scott Speed, who's, you know, obviously a really, really highly talented race car driver, but you just don't know what to expect out of him at the Speedway, you know, and for that matter, Dragon either. So I think there's a lot of wild cards, you know, where you just don't know how fast everyone's going to be, you know, or are all five Schmidt cars going to be as fast as the fast cars were last year? You know, questions like that, you just don't know the answer to.
You are calling it all, he called it all five fast cars, or Schmidt cars, when in fact they're in different spots, but those, I think
yeah,
there's...
You just don't, from where we're sitting at our shop on Rockville Road, I mean, you don't know how much information sharing there's going to be between all those different shops and alliances. You know, I mean, I could see it going the other way too, where, you know, they're going to start competing with one another, and it could go the other way. They may all hurt each other. So you just don't know until we get out there Saturday and everyone gets on track and we can see where everyone's shaking out.
Would we have known any more if there had been an oval already this season?
A little bit. You know, I mean, I think you'd know kind of whose cars have speed. You know, Indianapolis is way different. You know, I mean, if you look at last year, you know, the Dragon cars weren't great on most of the ovals, but they had really good cars at the Speedway. You know, so you just, I don't know. Like I said, to start out, you know, more than anything, I'm confident with the work we've put in over the winter, you know, the progress that I feel like we've made on our cars. You know, I feel confident in that, and I try to just think more about that than what everyone else is going to do. Just keep focused on our game plan and the things that we want to work on this month, and I think if we stay focused on that and do things the way we're supposed to, we'll be in good shape.
Ed Carpenter joins us. I saw recently you picked up and added Milwaukee to your 2011 schedule. How many races are we at now for you?
I can never remember the exact number. We're doing all the ovals, and then we're doing Mid-Ohio, Baltimore, and Sonoma. So
okay,
whatever that adds up to. How many ovals are there?
Eight. Nine road course, street course, and eight ovals. So you've got 11 races.
That's what that adds up to for me. So right now I'm just focused on one though.
And you're going to go to Japan.
I think we're going to Japan if the series goes.
Yeah.
But I meant that's a little bit of a surprise, I think, isn't it? Did that team go to Japan last year?
Uh-uh. But you know, maybe that's not official. I don't know.
It's okay. We're not trying to pin you to the wall with information.
No, I mean,
things change.
I guess I probably said all the ovals. Assuming you know, I have a hard time thinking we'll be racing on an oval in Japan this year, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, there is a possibility that they do the road course now in Japan. That is one of the options there. And, well, as we're learning, things are definitely written in pencil with the way we're proceeding at this point, that we're open to changing things as we go.
Exactly. I'm okay with that as long as we're making progress. So, I mean, it's hard to – I don't think anybody's pushing on the whole Japan thing just because they've got bigger problems over there than worrying about running a race at Motegi. So if we can go over and put on a show and do good for them over there, I'd love to – I mean, it's a trip that I love going on every year, so I'd be thrilled if we got to go.
Ed, it's always good to visit with you. We look forward to seeing you back in an IndyCar coming up on Saturday. Will you be in the car at noon precisely and ready to take laps if it's dry?
I don't know if we'll be out right at noon, but we'll be out close to noon. You know, we have plenty of things to do, so a lot of it will just depend on
what's going on.
Well,
go line up. Start pushing out.
We got plenty of track time this month.
Hey, I know it's not you. I know it's not your call. But if we see a second car, first of all, I assume you're not going to tell me who it is. But if you're going to have a second car on that team, at what point do you think we would see that car on the track?
You know, I'm not really privy to all that. You know, but I don't know that you'll see it till the Sunday.
Okay.
You know, I think from my involvement, I think that. You know, it's gonna happen if we get in Saturday and we're good and solid Saturday, and you know, and we feel that the other car will have speed, you know, to go in and get in a show on Sunday. I think that's what it'll boil down to. So,
all right,
the team's definitely focused on having a strong showing with the Dollar General 67 car, and I think that's the primary focus. And if we can do something else and have some fun, I think everyone's excited about it.
Sounds like you got company, so we'll let you get back to it.
Yeah, I'm babysitting right now.
Oh, no, you can't call it that.
Well, I'm watching the kids. Babysitting, watching the kids, I'm in charge. It's all the same thing. So.
It is not babysitting if it's your own.
Huh.
And just remember...
I shouldn't have said that, you're right, because I have plenty of alone time with the kids, so...
Just remember, by the way.
And since we've been talking, it looks like Ryder, my little guy, has got a chair up and been playing in the sink, so he's got a head full of wet hair, so I better get him dried off before Mom does get home.
Just remember, when there's two parents and two children, that's man-to-man defense, and anything beyond that's a zone.
We're lucky. We have one boy and one girl. My daughter, she's easy. My son's turning into a little crazy guy, so I'm glad it takes the two of us just to control him. Our daughter, McKenna, you know, she's pretty, for a three-year-old, she's almost independent already.
Ed Carpenter will be in the $67 general car at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for Sarah Fisher Racing starting this weekend. Thanks, Ed. We'll see you on Saturday.
Thanks, guys. See you out there.
All right, stay with us. More to come. Trackside, 1070 The Fan. Trackside on 1070 The Fan. Happy 36th birthday to Elio Castroneves. I understand he'll be on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. That's ABC, right?
Yes.
Late tonight. That was recorded when they were at Long Beach. And then I mentioned this on the show Friday night, just briefly, and there's not much to talk about because we don't have details, but the Miami Herald reported that the IRS is still trying to get more cash out of Elio. So I don't know. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, it was kind of a sketchy story, admittedly, by the Miami Riders. They were still trying to piece it through themselves.
A couple of emails we'll get to.
He's 36 years old.
That's what I read.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I'm just... That's,
yeah,
this is starting
a couple
to
of years.
Up.
Yeah. Still not as old as us, but yeah, he's getting there. Dean in Detroit says, I wish the Versus show had more of a PTI time slot. 4 p.m. Eastern is tough on folks who don't have a DVR. However, I've caught both shows, the debut And today's show live. One question, why does Versus make you wear a suit and tie while Indy and Robin are dressed more business casual? I get a lot of questions about that. We're NBC. And anchors on NBC, unless you're Robin, wear a suit and tie.
Yeah, because I wouldn't call that business casual.
No, Robin's definitely not business casual. I think the idea is that we still want to be somewhat genuine. And I know people are used to seeing me wearing a fire suit on pit lane, but my other jobs, I wear a coat and tie. When I do Pacers television, I wear a coat and tie. When I do television for the Colts, I wear a coat and tie. I do that with the Ball State stuff. So this is not something that's out of the ordinary for me. But again, it's what the executives at NBC said, and I'm not going to argue with them, and it does not bother me that I'm wearing a coat and tie. Yeah, my thought might have been maybe a little more business casual as well, but I'm pretty low on the totem pole, and I'm going to do what they asked me to do, and that's fine. The time slot there... It's possible. I've not heard this from anyone of authority, but it's possible that after the NHL playoffs are over, maybe the time slot changes, either with the 4 p.m. original air, or maybe the re-air goes to something like 11 Eastern instead of 2 a.m. But that's why the thing runs so late on the re-air, because most nights they're tied up with hockey throughout the night, and that's their number one property right now. That's where they get the most ratings. Here's one. People were talking about, this is from Tom and Dayton, about Justin Bieber driving the pace car. Reports that he contacted the Speedway about this. An article on 16th in Georgetown proclaims Bieber a better choice. In short, going to AJ as the fallback pace car driver only appeases the fans who already follow IndyCar, doesn't move the Indy 500 and the series forward. Tom says if IMS could get Justin Bieber to even try driving the pace car, it would be a huge win. And for all those still concerned about history and tradition, just ask yourself, which one would Carl Fisher pick? That was an interesting point at the end. And I have said many times, I am all for thinking outside of the box and doing what you can to bring new eyeballs to this event. I would not be in favor of Justin Bieber driving the pace car any year.
That makes my head hurt.
He may be a nice kid, but whatever.
And he can shoot the basketball. But that's...
Yeah.
No thanks.
From Bryce, with this many cars in the mix, wouldn't it make sense to go back to the old format? We all know how the weather can be here, and if they waste an hour or so for the top nine to shoot up for the pole, it could prove costly to other teams looking to qualify in a very limited amount of time.
Yeah, maybe. I didn't sense that last year's time slot was insufficient. I felt like we got the cars in that should have been in the race. I mean, there are more cars.
If weather comes into play, though, that will
be... Sure.
We're still looking at 22 on pole day, and then you'll go back in the top nine. We'll go at it again at 4:30. So then you're going to still have 18 cars going for 11 spots on Sunday.
It's going to be busy.
It's going to be great. Yeah, I think that's going to be really, really interesting to see how this all develops.
If you have rain, you just have to make provisions. There's going to be enough track time. And if everybody only gets one or two qualifying attempts... So be it. You're only guaranteed one. Make it happen.
Tonight, we're doing all emails with the Talk of Gasoline Alley. Send them in. Ask Donald at 1070thefan.com. That email probably won't get on tonight. I've got about 30 already lined up, but we're still saving them. We'll do email shows on occasion for the Talk of Gasoline Alley. Thanks to Ed Carpenter for Matt Hicks and Kurt Cavan. I'm Kevin Lee. Thank you, Kurt. Anything in the paper tomorrow?
Lots about the race car.
Okay, look forward to reading that in the Indianapolis Star. We'll talk to you again tomorrow night at 7. John Andretti will be with us in studio tomorrow night. Trackside, 1070 The Fan.